Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. There is a way to make the NBA schedule work and make everybody happy. I'll tell you what that is. Plus, why Philadelphia and Brooklyn are really putting pressure on Danny Ainge on this Monday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Hi there, John Corrales here from MassLive.com. Welcome aboard. Thank you for downloading the show and listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Yes, this is a daily podcast, and I'm here for you every one of those days. I'm from MassLive.com. I'm their Boston Celtics beat reporter. I've got that inside scoop on the Boston Celtics whenever they do come back. And in segment one, we'll talk about when the Celtics might come back. The league and the players are in a bit of a disagreement over when they can start. I think they can both start when they want. I've got a plan. In segment two, I talked about Philly and Brooklyn putting pressure on Danny Ainge. Why Danny Ainge really needs to get this right. Segment two is going to be the Philadelphia part of that. The segment three is going to be the Brooklyn part of that. So let's just get right to it. Right now, the NBA and Players Association are trying to figure out when to start the 2021 season, if there is actually going to be a 2020 part of that season. The NBA wants to start on December 22nd. Because that's going to get them an extra $500 million to $1 billion in revenue, depending on what the math really is. I know the NBA is trying to push real hard, and they're pushing through the media. This is happening in real time through the media, and they're trying to get this thing started as soon as possible. And I've talked about this a little bit. They want to get this started early because there's no real chance of getting fans in these buildings. Coronavirus is getting worse, and it's not going to get any better until, you know, a long time from now. We're heading into a really bad period. Sorry to say it. Somebody might not believe it, but this is just the facts of the matter. And so they are trying to just, if waiting until March isn't going to get fans in the seats, then let's get this season back, start when we're supposed to start, try to make up for things, and try to just get our schedule back, you know, our summers back. So here we are. The players, we're not all the players. It's not just the league versus the players. Some players want to start early. There's a little bit of a, you know, it's not just the players want January 18th. A significant portion of the players want January 18th because a lot of these players, a lot of star players, a lot of very important players just finished playing a month ago. So they are trying to not rush back themselves. And we don't want the side effects of them rushing back, because if they do rush back and everybody has to start on December 22nd, you're just going to see a lot more load management. It's not going to have the intended effect. So what can we do? I've said this before. I think there's a staggering that can happen. So I've got three steps here that I think can satisfy everybody. It is not perfect. There are certainly kinks to work out. But generally speaking, I've got three steps. So the basis of this is all of the non-bubble teams, plus the teams that were eliminated in the seeding games, plus the first round exits, all of those teams can start on December 22nd. So these are all the teams that this includes: Golden State, Minnesota, New Orleans, Utah, Sacramento, San Antonio, Phoenix, Memphis, Portland, Oklahoma City, Dallas, Orlando, Indiana, Philly, Brooklyn, Charlotte, Washington, Chicago, New York, Detroit, Atlanta, and Cleveland. 22 teams. Most of the league. They can start on December 22nd. Now, you start on December 22nd because TNT has the rights to the ring ceremony, but not they don't want that to be Christmas Day. Christmas Day is a separate thing. So step one, you hold the ring ceremony for the Lakers on December 22nd. At this point, they should be reporting for camp under my plan. They should be reporting for camp around now. You're not going to do it in a big arena, so hold the ring ceremony ahead of a doubleheader that includes the New Orleans Pelicans. You know, put a marquee team up there. Put a big-time player up there. But you got to put Zion on day one. So satisfy TNT. Give them Zion. Give them a ring ceremony for Lakers fans to watch. You know everybody's going to tune in for that. So give them that. That's step one. Step two, Christmas Day games. Let's put a Christmas Day schedule together. This is the thing that, this is the marquee, this is where ESPN wants the big marquee games. Okay, so the Lakers aren't going to be there in this. But look at this schedule that I can put together. Starting with Phoenix against Portland. Suns Blazers. You got Devin Booker. You got Damian Lillard. You got a team in Phoenix that got hot, that's got a little bit of, I don't want to say momentum, but at least the memory of them having that big run in the bubble is still sort of fresh. Damian Lillard is a big sale. You know, he's a big star. Kick the day off like that. Next, Hawks Timberwolves. Now you say, well, God, these two teams suck, but evenly matched. So it should be a good game. It should actually be a good game between two evenly matched teams. Plus, you get Trae Young. Plus, you get Karl Anthony Towns. You get some young stars over there. This is a marketing event here. Then you follow that up with Pelicans Grizzlies. Zion versus Ja. You got two up-and-coming young teams. Sell them. Sell them in this spot. Then the two marquee games. Sixers, Mavericks. What a game that's going to be. You got Luka. You got Ben Simmons. Joel Embiid. Porzingis. You got big, big stars in this game. Embiid is still one of the league's most popular stars. And then you follow that up with Warriors-Nets. KD against his old team. Steph Curry is back. Klay is back. It's Steph, Klay, and Draymond against KD and Kyrie Irving. That is a marquee game. No matter when they start or who's in this mix, a Warriors-Nets game is a Christmas Day game for sure. So that schedule should satisfy everybody. Now, after this, you stagger everyone else's returns. Step three includes a couple days off for these teams. You don't have to go crazy with the scheduling. You still have games on every night, but it's a little lighter schedule. But you still have enough teams, 22 teams, that you can get a decent schedule. Don't jam up a lot of their games here. There's time. So if the rest of the stars want to start on January 18th, here's the compromise. You go a couple weeks earlier and you start bringing them in round by round from when they exited. So January 4th, your second round exits. Houston, the Clippers, Toronto, Milwaukee. You start folding those teams into the mix. A week later, Denver and Boston get into the mix on January 11th. January 18th, Martin Luther King Day. Boom. Lakers, Heat, back, finals rematch. That's your marquee game on January 18th. That's their season opener. That's a big day. Here are your Martin Luther King Day games. Houston versus the Clippers. Nets versus Boston. Kyrie against Boston. He's going to have to play in that game. Milwaukee versus Denver. You get Giannis back. You give me Warriors again with Philly again. And then the Lakers Heat game. And yes, you're going to have the Lakers and the Heat make up for a few games. You can give the rest of the league some time off while they're taking a week and a half off or 2 weeks. Maybe the Lakers, maybe these other teams get a week and a half Or maybe they get a week and they just get a few longer breaks later on. There are ways to do it. Much smarter people than me are going to put that together. But you can do this. This is a way to get everybody back, start things when they're supposed to, when the league wants them to start, give the bigger stars more time to come back without taxing everybody. And there are ways. There are no concerts, there's no rodeos, there's none of that stuff. If fans aren't going to be able to go into these arenas, a lot of the stuff that bogs down NBA scheduling is not going to be there to hold them back. So you have a much more wide open slate. There are ways to do this. And especially if you're doing more regional types of games, like some of these games here, the big games, you have to deal with the travel. But then outside of these marquee games, you can go back to the heavy division stuff and do the series, the Major League Baseball type series. Like the Celtics can go to New York and play the Nets, the Knicks, two against the Nets, two against the Knicks, pop down to Philly, do two against the Sixers, get six of their road games done in two different cities. Like that's an easy way to do it. So I think the league can figure out a way to stagger this return. I think it's possible. So, when they do return, I think Danny Ainge is going to have his work cut out for him, because if we do this division-heavy schedule, oh man, Philadelphia and Brooklyn aren't just back and good and healthy. I think the moves that they made really put a ton of pressure on Danny Ainge. I'm going to tell you how Philly did that next. I am very excited that my next shipment of Built Bar is back, because I'm sitting here waiting. I take my Built Bars to the gym every day with me, and over the past week, I have not been able to take my Built Bars because I ran out. I'm buying these with my own money because I like them, because they work for me, because I can eat them after a workout, and I know they're giving my body what it needs. There are 18 flavors. For people with nut allergies, there are plenty of flavors for you. If you can have something like peanut butter, which is my favorite, boom, go for it. There's something for everybody. They're soft, they're covered in chocolate. It's like eating a candy bar. If you're health conscious, if you're looking to lose or maintain weight, they're perfect for you. Like I said, my peanut butter ones, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories. Can't beat that, because I'm getting the protein my body needs after I lift, and the calories aren't going to blow out what I do when I'm doing cardio. So low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Great if you're on a keto diet. What more can you ask for? So go to builtbar.com right now. Use the promo code Locked On. Even if you've used it before, you can use it again. You'll still get 20% off your next order. Use promo code Locked On for 20% off at builtbar.com. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify. On Friday, on MassLive.com, I wrote a column that is titled "Sixers Nets Move Put Pressure on Boston Celtics and Danny Ainge to Get It Right." And the premise of this is simply that the Sixers and the Nets didn't just get healthy. They didn't just get good players. They don't just have star players. They have now done competent things in the offseason to fix very glaring things. And I think that adds a lot of pressure to Danny Ainge and the Celtics, because, like I said before in segment one, we're looking at the possibility of a very division-heavy schedule. And if the Celtics have to play their division, well, you've got the Toronto Raptors, and who knows how they're gonna pan out now, but they're still really good. The Sixers, the Nets, and only the Knicks as like the easy team on the schedule. That makes this one of the hardest divisions in the NBA. And the only other one that comes close, it's the Pacific Division, with the Lakers, Clippers, and Warriors are going to be all elite teams. The Suns are on the come up, and who knows what the Kings are going to be, but they were okay. Okay. They're okay. I think that's probably the Pacific is the best one. And then the Atlantic is probably second. So what did the Sixers do? And I know some people disagree, and maybe this won't work out this way, but the way I see it is the Philly put a lot of pressure on Boston, because what was the thing, the biggest problem with the Sixers? It's that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid didn't have the structure around them to really succeed. You start with the GM and Sam Hinkie, who created the very infamous process. There was a lot of consternation around the process. I did not like it. I get what he was doing. I understand it. I get the extreme teardown part of it. I do not argue with the tactic necessarily. I just didn't like that was the tactic, that it was taken to such an extreme. But whatever your opinion is, there was always that debate. And after a while, it got very clear that they might not have been able to see this through. And so it became that they did have to let him go. The NBA didn't like one of their major market teams being in the cellar for that long. So the Colangelos came in. And that whole Twitter beef over the burner accounts cost them that front office. And now we're at Elton Brand, who is his first time running a team. So all of that instability really does, when you're changing course like that, you go from the extreme teardown to, all right, we're making moves to start getting better now. And then Elton Brand comes in. He's like, okay, we're doing the win now move thing. And he brings in, like, he trades for Jimmy Butler, trades for, he signs Al Horford, he trades for Tobias Harris. And then he makes the choice for Jimmy Butler. And that looks like the absolute wrong decision. That whole thing is messy, and players know this. Players recognize this. Meanwhile, you've got Brett Brown being asked over and over again that is his job safe? And he's got to tell people, like, oh, I'm not worried about my job or this or that. And so he gets fired. All the while, Ben Simmons is sitting there creating this atmosphere where now once he shoots a three, everybody loses their mind because he refused to shoot threes for so long that now it's become a thing. And Brett Brown obviously couldn't get Ben Simmons to shoot, and he couldn't figure out the ways to use them in the best ways possible. He didn't have the what's the word I'm looking for? I guess the cachet to finally make that move to put Ben Simmons at power forward, or the roster, really. And now here comes Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers doesn't give a shit what Ben Simmons says or thinks, or Joel Embiid says or thinks. Like, he's already won a championship. He's had, you can say what you want about what happened in LA, but he still had more success in LA with the Clippers than anybody else has had, really. He's got success. He knows how to handle stars. He's handled Kevin Garnett. You know, he's dealt with Kawhi. He's dealt with Chris Paul. He knows. He's seen it all. So he comes in and he gets to manage these guys. And I think Doc Rivers has a lot of respect around the league. These guys see Doc Rivers and they know that he's been through it. He played, he's won, he's successful. So that immediately brings in a level of confidence and a level of, hey, coach is in charge. On top of that, they bring in Daryl Morey. He's known for taking big swings. He's known for not being afraid. He knows how to, he knows all the tricks. He's got relationships around the league. He knows how to build. And with him, and I'm sure he and Doc, you know, it's weird for the GM to come in after the coach is hired. Or not GM, he's the president. Elton Brand is actually still the GM. But Morey comes in and is running the team. So, but I think by extending Elton Brand, he has now put confidence in Doc as the coach. And I don't think he'd have any issues with Doc Rivers. They'll figure out a style that works. That structure from top to bottom now, from the front office down to the bench, is everything that the Sixers have needed. And now if Morey brings in a point guard and says, hey, Ben Simmons, you're a forward now. You're a forward who can grab a rebound and run and lead us in the break. But you know what? In the half court, this is your job. This is how we're going to have to do it. And Doc can work with that and say, hey, you know what? You're more like a Kevin Garnett with your size and your ability to shoot and pass from the mid-range. Not shoot necessarily. I shouldn't say that. But pass from the mid-range. But develop this ability to shoot. Let's develop this ability to shoot. Let's work on this. Let's get out there and start shooting. I think that structure is what's been missing from Philly for a long time. If Joel Embiid comes in fat and out of shape, then guess what? December 22nd rolls around. If he's in that first wave of teams, if they follow my plan, then Doc can be like, you know what? You're not playing. You're running. Your season starts next week. You still got to run. You got to pass a conditioning test. Get out there and work. Doc can get this out of these guys. I have a lot of confidence in that. Maybe it won't work. Maybe those two guys are just too hard-headed. But then Daryl Morey will take a swing. So, all right, fine. I'm not afraid to trade Ben Simmons. I'm not afraid to trade Joel Embiid. Let's go. They're obviously going to try to make it work. Because there's talent there. There's a lot of talent there. But the structure is finally there in Philly. And I really do feel like that's the type of thing that's going to make Embiid and Simmons kind of fall more in line and do the things that they haven't been doing. That's the type of thing. They've been so immature, the both of them. This is going to force them to grow up a little bit. So Philly is going to be a problem. I think Philly is going to be a problem. The Nets also created structure, but not this way. Not this way. It's a looser kind of structure, but it's a necessary structure for their personnel. That's next. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Where Philadelphia needed structure to rein immature young stars into playing good basketball and doing what they needed to do or will need to do, the Nets had a different scenario where their two stars are more savant-ish. They are at a different level. We know Kyrie Irving well. Kevin Durant is at a different level. Maybe, you know, at his peak was maybe the best player in the world. It was Durant or LeBron. And like Durant is just insane. Okay. They don't need structure. This is two genius level basketball players. Now I know you don't want to hear that about Kyrie, but Kyrie does things at a genius level. I know you don't like to hear him say it. It's a little off-putting when he says it, but it is still true. All of the other stuff, like I'm not dismissing any of the other stuff that happened in Boston, but still on the floor, he's still a genius level kind of basketball player. So these guys don't need boundaries. They don't need the walls that Simmons and Embiid do. They need freedom, but they also need structure within that freedom. I compared it on Mass Live to wild horses running freely, but within a fenced-in area so they don't run away. And that's the thing with these guys. How do you relate to them and let them do their thing without letting it get too far out of control? And this is like a Rajon Rondo type of thing too. What do these genius level basketball players need? They need somebody who speaks their language. And that's what Steve Nash is. And that's why I liked the Steve Nash hire. Because he's an elite genius level player too. And he can see things on the floor. just like Kyrie can see things on the floor, just like KD can see things on the floor. Nash is one of those people that can manipulate the game. When he was playing the game, he can manipulate it. He's one of those genius level people that, and this is what I talk about with Jason Tatum. To get to this level, to get to the superstar level, you got to be able to come down and have a plan. Throughout the whole game, you have to have a plan. That I see this guy, I know the defender's tendencies, I know this team's tendencies, I know what they like to do. I know what these defenders like to do. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to set them up this way. It's like a boxing match. You set one thing up so you can use the punch that you want to throw. And Nash was elite at that. I'm going to set you up this way so when I want to get to this shot, I know I can do it when I need to. And that's what these elite players do. So Nash can see that. Nash can recognize things. He can look at video. He can see it on the floor and recognize it in real time. And if he's calling a play and he and Kyrie sees something, Kyrie can talk to Nash and they can actually have a legitimate conversation. And Kyrie knows that when Nash responds, it's from a place of knowledge, a similar knowledge, an understanding of this game that is at this level, that Kyrie can look at Nash and be like, I'm listening to what he has to say because I respect every damn word that's coming out of his mouth because he's done this. So that is first and foremost, that kind of player is that kind of former player is, I think, great to relate to these guys. Now, when Kyrie and KD were on the Durant podcast and talking about, oh, I don't feel like we have a head coach, a lot of people overreacted to that. And out of context, it looked bad. I think they were talking more on like a collaborative level. When I heard Kyrie say it, nothing stood out to me when he said it. I always felt like he was talking more. I'm like, this is not a head coach player. This is just a bunch of coworkers working together. And in the NBA, that really is kind of what it is. I know a lot of people, you know, you probably listen and you have this concept of the head coach from maybe when you played, maybe in high school, maybe in college, or you are a big college fan and you see how these college coaches control their players. Everything below the NBA is a coach's league. And in the NBA, it's a player's league. Coaches get fired very easily because players get the majority of the money and they're the biggest investment and they're the biggest draw. So coaches are more coworkers in a lot of ways. Like, they do put the game plan out there. They are in charge. There is a hierarchy, but that's still the dynamic in the NBA, especially when players are like Kyrie and KD. I think that's a different dynamic. And Nash works. But Nash brings in Mike D'Antoni and Ime Udoka. And that hiring is what triggered this entire thing. That hiring right there. When Philly hired Morey and when Brooklyn hired D'Antoni and Udoka, I was like, this is it. Those moves solidified this whole thing and the piece that I wrote. So D'Antoni is the head coach. D'Antoni is Nash's former head coach. So they've already developed a relationship. So that's a perfect person to put alongside Nash. And D'Antoni, still in the league, still coaching the past few years, coaching James Harden, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, and to a fair amount of success. Not the level of success that they'd hoped, but they were still really good. And he still rolled with everything, and they ran his style, and everybody was on board, it seemed. So to have a head coach that coached at that level with these stars as and kind of like an outside advisor in a way, but he's a head coach that's on the coaching staff as an assistant now. Very important for Nash. Very important. because now they can talk and bounce ideas off of one another. The hiring of Udoka, I think, is also very important, not only because he's had, I think, 7 years under Greg Popovich. Who better to learn from than Pop? But with Udoka and Jacques Vaughn, there's diversity on the coaching staff that has been very important to Kyrie Irving. So Kyrie Irving now has a head coach that he respects from a basketball level and a head coach that he should respect from a personal level for making sure that his bench is diverse at a time where diversity in the NBA is being challenged. Now, Udoka, Jacques Vaughn are still in the pipeline as Vaughn is the associate head coach. Udoka gets a big role here. That's very important. And I think that's really important for Kyrie Irving to see, to be a part of. This gives them now in Brooklyn a structure, not walled structure, but that big fenced in area where the Stallions can run free, but cannot run away. I think that is huge. Now, this is all on paper. This is theoretical. It might not work. It very easily, I admit, could blow up, but I can see how everything fits in Brooklyn. They still have moves to make and a team to continue to build around Irving and Durant, but this was a very important piece to the puzzle, and they nailed it, in my opinion. They nailed it. So now Danny Ainge has to get it right. He has to get it right because you've got Jason Tatum about to sign, I expect, a long-term contract extension. So you've got 4 years of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown together because Jaylen Brown's extension is 4 years. In those 4 years, you have the possibility of Brooklyn and Philly being exceptionally good for all four of those years. I don't know what's going to happen to Toronto, but these two teams are going to be really, really good. And if Danny Ainge can't build the right team around Tatum and Brown, and they are consistently in third in the division, which would put them fifth or sixth in the East. Now you're looking at, does Tatum want to be around this for much longer? Does Jaylen Brown want to be around this for much longer? In 4 years, Atlanta could be good. And Jaylen Brown's from Atlanta. So who's to say if he would want to, where's he going to want to go as a free agent? If Danny Ainge can't build this winter, if he can't get this offseason right and keep the Celtics at the top of the East and show these two young stars that Boston is where they need to stay for another big contract, then you run the risk of not only having the Celtics in the middle of the pack for the next few years, you run the risk of these young stars thinking like, no, Boston's not going to, they're just middle of the pack. We had our best chance in the bubble and we never got close. And now I got to go. Tatum, who knows where he'd go, wherever Bradley Beal is, maybe. There's a lot here. There's a lot at stake. Brooklyn and Philly making these moves ramps up the pressure to not only get this right, but to make sure long-term that the Celtics are a team that in the East is where the ring chasers want to go, where free agents want to sign, that their young players want to stay. So I don't want to make it all doomsday, but the pressure is much higher, I think, today than it was a week ago. That's my opinion. You can always share your opinion with me on Twitter at Reds Army_John. You can always email me, jcorrales@masslive.com. I'll share that. Normally, I do a written mailbag. I'm on vacation this week from Mass Live. I'm still doing the podcast. That's right. I podcast on vacation for you. But still email me. I'll still do a podcast mailbag If I get a ton of questions, maybe I'll do a two-part mailbag. I don't know. We'll see. Depends on how many questions I get in. So do that. If you're a first-time listener, hope you've enjoyed the show. Please continue to listen by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. You will find this podcast, including on Spotify or wherever podcasts exist. All of you regular listeners, if you haven't already given a 5-star rating and a good written review, I would very much appreciate that. All of you who have done so have made this show the number one Boston Celtics podcast in the world, and I appreciate you for all of the love and support and the ratings and reviews. It's all awesome. I love you for it. I also love you for sharing the podcast and telling your friends that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.